This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. All that from Matt Stafford. What's it going to take to get Deshaun Watson? Wait, your firstborn? I mean, and it's multiple. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You better have more than one kid. You need to give up all the kids for Deshaun Watson. Two first and a third, and Jared Goff. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline.
We already have a trade that rocked the league with implications that run beyond this deal.
Matthew Stafford is a Ram. Jared Goff is a Lion.
We always thought that this would be an unprecedented movement of quarterbacks during the offseason.
I was at the McDonald's All-American game, I want to say in 2000. It was in D.C. in 2000, maybe three. It was LeBron James' last non-professional game, his last game in high school. And his team lost, actually. It's like the only game he ever lost. I saw it. But it was announced, I want to say, maybe I'm conflating two different events or two or three different days. I think this all happened on that night. It was announced that LeBron was about to sign a Nike deal worth like $90 million or something like that in 03. That was a lot of money in those days. Anyway, I see John Thompson backstage, basically, as it were, and the late John Thompson. And I forgot how, like, why it came up with us. He was sitting down, and I was talking to some people. Somehow we started talking, and I was like, Coach, you just, you know, $90 million. He's 18 years old. He said, yeah, but if LeBron's getting that, now think what it's going to cost to get Kobe. Kobe was at the top of his game, and LeBron had not yet played in the pros, and Kobe was already a champion. John Thompson's point is, if you set the market with LeBron James before he's done anything, what is the guy who's already done stuff going to want? In other words, at that moment, it wouldn't always be the case, but at that moment, Kobe was more valuable than LeBron. If you're sitting there as the Houston Texans right now, and you're like, wait, hold on, Detroit got a serviceable quarterback. Now, Goff has a big contract. Like, what you have to understand is the two firsts and a third in order to get Stafford with Goff, partly that Stafford's better than Goff, and partly that Goff has a worse contract than Stafford. So you have to give up draft compensation to get him back. One of the reasons Deshaun Watson's so angry is because his team stinks, and one of the reasons they stink is in that stupid trade that where they gave away DeAndre Hopkins. They got back David Johnson. I think it was Bill Barnwell, but like this is widely known, who wrote on ESPN.com at the time. If you take David Johnson in that contract, you should get draft compensation for that, right? It's not like, here, now I'm going to give you something for that. You're taking a bad contract. You should get something for it. But somehow in that deal with the Texans, Bill O'Brien acted as though David Johnson and his contract had value. It's very clear. Goff and his contract, because of the contract, have negative value. Otherwise, if that contract's not one of the reasons and there's negative value there, otherwise you're telling me that Matthew Stafford is two firsts and a third better than Goff? How many Super Bowls has Stafford gone to? Goff is not that deep into his career. He's been to two Pro Bowls and a Super Bowl. Or are you going to tell me the relationship soured that much with Sean McVay that they're so desperate to get rid of him, two firsts and a third? If I'm the Texans, I'm sitting there going like, a 32-year-old Matt Stafford with all the talent in the world, arm talent at least, but has not translated to greatness on the field, has translated to goodness, gets two firsts and a third. What are we going to get for Deshaun Watson? Deshaun Watson? Has it translated to greatness for Watson? Well, they didn't win a lot of games this year. Again, they decimated their own franchise with foolish trades. But Deshaun Watson has been to the playoffs. Deshaun Watson has won double digits. Deshaun Watson has won a national title in college. Deshaun Watson's a winning player. Already a great player. And Matthew Stafford's one of those dudes. I'll put it like this. When we talk Justin Herbert, on First Take or on this show, on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, when we talk Justin Herbert, I'll say something like, Justin Herbert, his floor seems to be Matt Stafford, which is a great floor to have for a young quarterback. But if Justin Herbert turned out to be Matt Stafford, you'd be a little disappointed if he's your quarterback. You're expecting more. Stafford's not Jay Cutler. Like, look at that talent early in his career, and it never really panned out. Stafford's better than Cutler. But, and this is a good experiment. What would Stafford do in a good organization on a good team? But, oh my God, two firsts and a third? Don't forget, you spent the first overall pick, not a first round pick, the first overall pick in the draft on Goff. Then you gave him the biggest contract in NFL history. And then you turn around, and by the way, he gets you to a Super Bowl and he goes to two Pro Bowls. And then you turn around and give up two firsts and a third. So what have you? What turned into Matthew Stafford? The number one overall pick in the draft, Goff, two firsts and a third turned into Matthew Stafford. Wow. It just seems to me like the Rams are hustling backward. You know, they are going to be improved from last year, but what a price to pay! It seems to me like Les Snead overpaid. Booger McFarland on, by the way, ESPN football analyst, Booger McFarland on the Jared Goff situation.
I don't think Jared Goff got better. Let's go back to Jeff Fisher's head coaching tenure when Jared Goff was a rookie. Hard knocks, remember? He couldn't even really call a play. He couldn't break the huddle. Bring in Sean McVay, and now Sean McVay is holding his hand all the way up until the play clock goes to 15 where the head coach can't communicate to the quarterback. So he's basically holding his hand, helping him play quarterback. And now McVay is expecting Jared Goff to be further advanced than that, and Jared just wasn't. So although Jared had a lot of success early on, the success never continued to grow. And McVay was like, listen, I basically held your hand to the Super Bowl. Now I need you to hold my hand and take me further. And Jared Goff couldn't do that.
Well, that's a hell of a point by Booger McFarland. That's a real good point. You know, sometimes at a certain point, you have the player has to continue on the trajectory. In other words, if you take a snapshot of Goff at any moment in the last couple of years, be like, okay, at various times an elite quarterback, at other times not so great. But you would think, given his age and his accomplishments early in his career, you're expecting more. But at a certain point, nope, that's it. It levels off. It doesn't. You're anticipating. Our brains are anticipation machines. You know, you ever get off a treadmill and all of a sudden it feels like you got to catch yourself because the ground stopped moving, right? It's because your brain's anticipating what's going to come next. So when you look at a guy like Goff or Wentz or Dak early in their career, and they're already this good, you're expecting them to keep getting better. And McVay was with Goff too, apparently. And obviously it didn't happen, and you know, the situation soured. Now, part of that is Todd Gurley is not just a running back who can give you the play option, the play action option, but he's a supreme. You know, that year they had, Todd Gurley was in his prime. It was the last time he was really Todd Gurley before all the injuries. And remember, he was hurt coming out of college, or he wouldn't have gone 9th overall anyway, or 10th overall anyway. He'd gone higher. Gurley was an all-world back that let the Rams do a lot of stuff that, like, I like Cam Akers. I like different guys they've had since then, but Gurley was on a different level. And he hasn't had that. But, like, if you're Goff and you're like, my God, what do you need? Weapons everywhere you look, an offensive line that can really pass protect, an all-world running back that gives you play action and RPO, like all kinds of options that you can do with him. He can catch passes. He can run between the tackles. You can line him up in different places. A defense. The Rams had a defense even then. It's not like it is today, but they could create turnovers and stuff back then. Like, Goff needs – and a head coach – needs, like, who is a dynamic offensive mind. He needs every single thing to succeed. And then the question is, would Goff stop you from winning a Super Bowl? You could argue yes, because they got all the way there. And had Goff done anything, they'd have beaten the Patriots. It's the lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. So they obviously think that Matthew Stafford offers them not only a premium over Goff, but a premium at a very high leverage moment in their franchise's history. They gave up so much to get to the position they're in now, the Rams did, that they need to finish the deal. You know, it cost them a couple of firsts to get Jalen Ramsey. They haven't drafted in the first round since they drafted Goff himself. Rams are making moves trading for Matt Stafford.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
Lot going on in L.A. sports right now. Not just the Rams and all the noise they're making. By the way, the job now is you got to win the Super Bowl. You got to a Super Bowl with Goff. The job now is win the Super Bowl, L.A. Rams. Meantime, ESPN's NBA power rankings. I was talking about how great everything was going in L.A., or how much noise L.A. is making right now in the sports universe, but the Lakers no longer number one in the power rankings, so maybe L.A. has fallen down a little, except the Clippers have assumed the number one spot. Kawhi Leonard and company have the NBA's best record. The Clippers have a six-game swing with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George entering quarantine due to health and safety protocols, and Patrick Beverley, you know, has a bad knee. He's out. They had a seven-game winning streak snapped in Atlanta. They have Kawhi and Paul George back after missing just two games due to contact tracing. The Clippers are a deep team. They were a deep team last year, but I think Ibaka gives them a premium over Montrezl Harrell because he can spread the floor. He can shoot the three, and he can rim defend. You know, he can defend the paint and certainly block shots at least. And he's a very good defender, as is Harrell, but Ibaka's more versatile player. You can play a lot of bigs next to Ibaka because he can do some things that some modern bigs can't. But Serge Ibaka's not the reason that they're, you know, this good. They've played together another season. Ty Lue's doing a very good job. Don't forget, and this goes for what I said about the Nets last segment too, we're in a COVID year still where there's not practice like there normally is and people are socially distanced. So first-year teams that come together like the Nets last year, like Brooklyn this year, are at a disadvantage. But Brooklyn's now going on their second year the Clippers are, largely with the same cast. And yet, you know, Lou Will, Montrezl Harrell, Reggie Jackson, Nick Batum, which was a big pickup. Nick Batum, remember, he got a max deal or something close to it because he was the statless all-star. I mentioned this last week, but at that time, are you sure that you knew who was going to be better between Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, and Nick Batum? Like, he was in that category. People, when he got his deal, weren't even like, oh, that's too much for Nick Batum. They're like, oh, he's a really good player. Lost interest on a non-competitive team. He looks interested again. Remember, he got a max deal. No one did him any favors. He earned it. So that's a big pickup for them, an interested Nick Batum who can play, make, and do some things. But none of this really matters to me for the Clippers, and I understand power rankings are based on regular season performance. Guys, until Paul George shows up as a, like, put it this way, if Paul George showed up as his normal self, the Clippers are still at a disadvantage against the Lakers because Kawhi and LeBron are both superstars, as is AD. Paul George is the next thing to a superstar. Paul George is not a five-star player. He's a 4.5-star player. So even if Paul George just shows up as his normal self, ain't going to be enough for the Clippers in the playoffs. He has to elevate. But instead of that, or even staying the same, he gets worse in the playoffs. So I don't believe in this Clippers team in the play. I don't care what they do in the regular season. Until I see Paul George show up when it matters in the playoffs, I'm not a believer. Meantime, LeBron James, who's whatever you want to say about the Lakers, and they hit a little bit of, you know, they were on a road trip and this and that. The Lakers have basically spent all the time between when they acquired AD and this moment as the best team in basketball. You know, like, let's be honest about it. LeBron James at the post-game presser. Listen to what he says about playing with intensity and hustle.
The talent can only take you so far. I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of talented teams in this league, but it's how far you can go as far as how hard you play, you know, how much you challenge yourself on the defensive end to try to get stops, to want to get stops, and just have that mentality. So that's just who we've been over the last year or so.
In certain respects, it'll be easier for the Lakers to win a championship this year because they just did it, because they've had more time playing together, because some of the other super teams in the league have been thrown together, like the Brooklyn Nets, and are at a disadvantage because it's a COVID year, as I said, social distancing, no practices the same way, the whole thing. and how much can you learn over Zoom about each other, right, compared to a normal season. But in another way, the Lakers are a little bit at a disadvantage compared to last year because respect to Dennis Schroeder, who's a good player, and he went from a guy like, is he actually good or is he just putting up numbers on a bad team, to last year before he was on the Lakers, no, he's a good player. And this year, again, now Schroeder can play. But the thing about Rajon Rondo is that playoff Rondo is a real thing. And the reason for that is the playoffs are the coach's time. You know, plays out of timeouts, and there's more intensity and scouting and preparation. And players who understand the game better have a better chance in the playoffs. You'd think Rondo doesn't shoot. I mean, he shoots better than he used to because the whole league does. You have to. But he's not a good shooter compared to, like, you know, his average at his position. So you'd think, like, in the playoffs, you kind of need that. No. What you need most of all is a basketball brain, and Rondo has a first-rate basketball brain. And that was a big help to the Lakers in the playoffs because they kind of did have a big three in the playoffs last year. Rondo was an all-star in the playoffs. He really was. They don't have that anymore. Someone else going to have to step up. You hear LeBron talking about organizing the offense and everything, but this dude is 112 years old. He plays every minute of every game, basically. He's in the finals every single year. He's in the Olympics. He's running around making movies. The dude's exhausted, and he's going to have to continue this very heavy workload because, again, respect to Schroeder. He's good, but Rondo is a different kind of cat to have on your team running a second unit or even playing next to LeBron, especially when it matters most. And they don't have that guy this year. Jason from Kentucky, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's up, Max? Real quick, I do want to say I love your point about Rondo because I'm a Celtics fan, and in 08, they always said that was a big three. Like, no, that was a big four because that was Rondo in his prime. He was different in the playoffs. Yeah. But the point I wanted to make was about the Brooklyn Nets defense. I think losing – and I think that just – kills their, like, interior defense. I mean, they have Jeff Green running center. They don't really have a big. And I think not having Spencer Dinwiddie's height off the bench hurts their defense as well. And I just, unless they bring somebody in, I really don't see how they can improve their defense that much, especially with this being a COVID year and they don't get to practice.
Well,
as much
bad
as they
news
would
and
like
good
to.
News. I think you're right, but there's bad news and good news. First of all, Jeff Green, as not as a five, but as a four, is a good player. Too much of his career was spent like, oh, Jeff Green's a disappointment. Because looking back at it, he's really not a three. He's not a perimeter defender and never has been. But as the league evolved, his skills as a four are valuable. But as a five, come on. I mean, there's small ball, and then there's just like, well, we don't have a guy, so we're going to use Jeff Green. But Jeff Green's become a valuable player. He's a good player. The Nets, the bad news is, you're right, as presently constructed, they won't get out of the East. They must get a defender, a guy who can at least play real minutes and get you defensive rebounds. Because you see, even when the Nets have a responsible defensive possession, as it were, they don't get the defensive rebound. It doesn't matter. The other team, the other offense gets another chance. Again, let me just say, like, this is shocking. They have since the Harden trade, they're literally the number one offense of all time. Per 100 possessions, how many points do they score? Number one of all time. Per 100 possessions, how many points do they allow? Number one worst all time. They're dead last all time. And here's the thing. The number one offense of all time, they're going to be that by the end of this year anyway. But they're playing who are they playing in this little span? Okay, the Wizards, the Thunder, the Hawks, the Heat, a depleted Heat team, the Cavs, I mean, the Magic. They had the Bucks, the only good team they played in there. The Knicks. I mean, that's who they played since Harden got dealt. They're off. These teams are awful. They have a hard time scoring. They have a hard time defending, which means your number one offense ever is like, yeah, but you're playing bad teams. And your worst defense ever? What if you were playing good teams? These are bad teams. The Cavs gave them $147, 147 points. They just gave up 48 points to Washington in the fourth quarter. So that's the bad news. Here's the good news. You can find a defensive rebounder by the trade deadline. It doesn't have to be an all-star. It just has to be a guy good enough to play 25 minutes a game. If he can play 25 minutes a night and grab you some defensive boards, meaning he has some skills in other areas good enough, you should be able to find that on the trade market. That's not impossible to find. It's not a major piece they need, but it is an essential piece that the Nets are going to have to deal for. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. And I hope the Nets hold up their end of the deal, not like the Clippers last year. That's the finals we want to see. Lakers, Nets. Clippers didn't hold up their end of the deal. LeBron and the Lakers did. Are the Nets going to hold up their end of this deal? Because big threes are supposed to at least make the finals. Hey, how do you approach, think about this one, Tom Brady and say, hey, Tom, you see that throwing motion? No, I've been around. This is not my first rodeo, Tom. Let me show you how to throw this thing. Who would have the nerve to do that? Tom Brady's throwing coach coming up next on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Finding great candidates to hire can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, I guess, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter instead. Its powerful technology actively finds and invites qualified candidates to apply to your job. My Wi-Fi was out. I wound up with Raj. But normally, if I had access to ZipRecruiter, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers that post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. Tom Brady's throwing coach. Oh, the nerve of this guy. Coming up next on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. How do you tell Tom Brady? Hey, Tom, come over here a second. You see how you're throwing there? No, you got it all wrong. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I can't remember the last time I've been so anxious to interview a guest. In this case, Dr. Tom House, Tom Brady's throwing coach, joins me on the Goodyear Hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Dr. House.
You dropped a doctor on me. Okay, let's go.
I did. You have a PhD in sports psychology, do you not?
Yes, sir, I do.
Now, I know that you threw out of the bullpen, that you were a relief pitcher and all that, and I know you started a handful of games also. I did not know until I just looked it up. You had a sub-2 ERA the year after I was born. You are very well known for having baseball pitchers throw with a football. Before I even get into Tom Brady, I'm fascinated by that. Why? What gave you that idea, and why is it helpful?
Well, I have to give credit where credit's due. There was a trainer, when I was with the Padre organization, there was a trainer, Dick Dent, mm-hmm. who had pitchers throw footballs as part of their running. Touchdown Tommies is what they call them. So they literally run pass patterns and throw footballs to each other. And for the idea that it made more fun out of running. But we found out that you can't throw a football wrong biomechanically and make it spiral. And the fact that it was 15 ounces versus 5 ounce baseball, there was actually some strength building involved. So it's what we're today calling cross specificity training. Mm-hmm. 3 words to determine, hey, you know what? You can throw other things and it helps you throw your baseball.
You know, what's amazing, that now you're Tom Brady's throwing coach. How did that happen with Tom Brady?
Well, I'd like to say it was well thought out and orchestrated. It was just one of those zeitgeist things. It just kind of happened organically. Matt Cassel was Tom Brady's backup for 4 or 5 years in New England. Mm-hmm. Matt was a Trojan quarterback who also played baseball. And as it was, at that point in time when Brady showed up, Matt Cassel was working with us. I was the pitching coach up at USC who also did, you know, other training with the Rod Dedeo Research and Baseball Institute up there. And one day Brady shows up with Cassel. I think it was a day that I'm trying to think. Alex Smith was there. I think Drew Brees was there. It was kind of like a who's who. They all showed up at the same time. Tom said, you mind if I kind of sit in and work out and watch what's going on?
And you said, all right, Tom, but listen, just don't, you know, I'm doing something important over here. Don't, you know, just Don't make a spectacle of yourself, no, all right? So now you look at Tom Brady talking to Tom House, who's a legendary throwing coach, not only for Tom Brady, but was Nolan Ryan's pitching coach. Tom, on the Goodyear Hotline. Tom, Nolan Ryan, when people talk about old athletes, I think he's the most overlooked guy. He pitched in the majors until he was 46 with no breaks. He's the all-time leader in strikeouts and walks, so he's throwing an ungodly number of pitches. And as late as age 44, Nolan Ryan was arguably inning for inning the best pitcher in baseball. He led the league in walks and hits to innings pitched and strikeouts per nine. He was so I always wonder, and I want to pick your brain about this. I don't think it's coincidence. You're working with Tom Brady. He's 43, breaking longevity records and age records. Same thing with Nolan Ryan. But I also think, you know, guys who are kind of, it's like Darwinian, guys who are adapted to succeed in a given era are the guys who are going to succeed in that era, right? Once upon a time, you had to take the ball every 4 days sometimes, 3 days,
right.
Throw a million innings, and if you had arm issues, you were going to break down. But Nolan Ryan threw maximum effort. His average velocity was like comparable to today. What was it about Nolan Ryan? Are there similarities between Nolan Ryan and Tom Brady? You coached both of them.
Well, all of these Hall of Famers, all of these elite superstars, the one thing they do have in common is this genetic predisposition to try to get better at something every day. And what we learned from Nolan, who was not the best pitcher in the history of the game, but the most dominating pitcher in the history of the game, hardest man to get a hit off of, what we learned from him is there's no reason you can't do at age 45 what you did at age 25 if you follow a process that is conducive to prolonging your career. And what Nolan did and what Tom Brady is doing is exactly that. Every athlete that comes to us comes with the idea that they're going to get biomechanics, functional strength, mental, emotional, and nutrition and sleep for recovery. Those are the four pillars for long-term health and performance. And every one of these superstars, every one of these Hall of Famers, literally tried to get better every day in each of those pillars. So the common denominator between all of them, whether it's a Hall of Fame pitcher, a Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame golfer, is that they do all four things to the best that their aptitude will allow every day of their existence. And what you're seeing with that commitment is we're proving, and I'm sure you've heard Tom Brady say he wants to play at least 45. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, his skills haven't diminished based on our testing and our research. He may play longer. Nolan Ryan and Jamie Moyer, two completely different kind of pitchers, both threw into their late 40s before they retired.
Yep, so and Moyer got better as his career went on. He was better at 42 than he was at 22 or even 32 for sure.
Yep, and here's another kid. Now, he's not a Hall of Famer, but Jamie took what was in front of him and committed to making himself better. So there's proof positive, and it trickles all the way down to a 12- or a 13-year-old athlete in today's world. If you can get the right information and instruction in front of you, you have a format called play to get it done in a team sport or an individual sport. There's no reason that you can't improve long term in everything.
Tom House, ladies and gentlemen, the guy who would look at Nolan Ryan and Tom Brady and say, "Nolan, Tom, you're getting on my last nerve today. You're not doing it. Come over here. Let me show you how to do that."
All right,
Dr. Yeah, Tom House, thank you very much for coming on. I want you to come back on. I want to talk to you for longer than this. I have lots of questions for you. Now, tell me about your company, Mustard. Tell me, before you guys, you're on
okay,
here promoting
real,
something. Tell
quick,
me about Mustard.
Real quick, because I know you're on a time frame here. If you just went to teammustard.com, It's actually everything that you and I were just talking about. We're putting it on a cell phone app to democratize what the superstars and elite athletes get to keep young players, male and female. Right now, 80% of young athletes quit playing their sport by age 14. Mustard is designed to get the same exact efficacy of information and instruction that the elite athlete gets, put it in the hands of mom and dad and a youth coach through the app called Mustard, and that will hopefully keep the kids healthy, give them good instruction, and allow them to have fun playing the game. The power of sports and play is what Mustard is all about.
By the way, I have a daughter who plays basketball. I'm not kidding. I'm going to download that app. Tom House, yep. Look at Nolan Ryan and say, hey, Nolan, my best ERA, 193, Nolan. What's your best? You ever have a 193, Nolan? Ever have a 193? No back talk. The great Dr. Tom House, ladies and gentlemen, the Goodyear Hotline, helping you discover the road ahead, Goodyear more driven. Raj, get Tom House back on this show after the Super Bowl. I have questions for him. With the Super Bowl coming up, by the way, we'll see who's smarter than Max. That's me. It's time for some straight talk. God, it really gives me a lot of anxiety playing these trivia games. You ever see Win Ben Stein's Money back in the day on Comedy Central? Really, it's a vehicle for Jimmy Kimmel. He was the star. He's the host. But Ben Stein was willing to get up there and show you what he knew or didn't know. And everyone has gaps in their information that can be embarrassing. And Raj puts me on the spot with these trivia games. Anyway, it's time for Straight Talk. Look, we all drop our phones. It happens. You fumble it, you crack it, you splash it. Well, Straight Talk Wireless now offers this new Platinum Unlimited plan that includes phone protection. Just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, and data. Plus 20 gigs of hotspot and 100 gigs of cloud storage and more, all on the best networks. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. See Mobile Protect terms and conditions at Asurion.com/Straight Talk. Who's smarter than Max? Coming up, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80. And on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, looks back on the long-running feud between Raiders owner Al Davis and NFL Commissioner Pete Rozelle, two of the most influential figures in the history of pro football, beginning in the mid-1960s when Rozelle was the NFL's young commissioner, and Al Davis, of course, led the rival AFL, and continuing through the 1980s when Davis waged a lawsuit. I don't know if you wage a lawsuit, but he brought a lawsuit against the league to allow him to move the Raiders from Oakland to Los Angeles. The two Titans were constantly and very publicly at odds. The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, premieres February 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And immediately following its debut, check out my boys, Jalen and Jacoby, the After Show podcast, where the guys will be joined by director Ken Rogers. Listen and subscribe to Jalen and Jacoby, the After Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Who's smarter than Max?
I don't know, Max, but all I know is this. The Super Bowl is coming up this week, and I got one question.
Yeah.
Who's smarter than Max?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I don't know if you know this, but this Tom Brady feller is in there. He's throwing quite a bit of touchdowns. So I want to ask, hey, B, you there? You there, Brendan? You there, Bubba?
Yep.
All right, we're going to start. So you're going to go head-to-head with Max. I want to know the quarterbacks that have thrown five or more touchdown passes in the Super Bowl. Go ahead, Max. Give me one.
All of them? Brady.
Oh, you know how this works. Just give me
Tom
one.
Tom Brady.
Oh, that's good. That boy good. See how that works there, B? Can you follow? Can you give me one?
Joe Montana.
Joe Montana. Now, Tom Brady has thrown 18. Joe Montana is second with 11.
13.
So there are...
No. 11. Joe Montana threw 13 touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
Don't worry about that. I'm going off of this list I got in front of me. So
maybe
you just
he
stick
ran
to this. All right, go ahead.
What list you got in front of you?
Yeah.
Don't you worry about it. It's all about watch.com. It's always accurate. Just go. You know how this works, Max. It's somewhat. It's close. It's not always right, but it's close.
Well, let me think now. More than five. Elway had help because of the running game. I'm going to say, Eli had to have thrown, was it more than five? Because that one was low scoring.
There's a time limit.
Who played in at least two? Peyton Manning.
Boy, you ain't got this right. No, that's wrong. He hasn't played enough.
The only
do you
want to
go big? You already won, but do you want to go big? What do you got?
Terry Bradshaw.
Oh, yeah, duh.
Terry Bradshaw, third on this. See, you cheating.
Super Bowls
see,
in there.
You got
there,
Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, Bubba. Yep, by the way, Brendan is not on camera. He's looking this up.
That's
but,
his
yeah,
victory
right.
music. B1, you could have won with Roger Staubach, Steve Young,
Staubach?
Kurt Warner, Troy Aikman, Brett Favre.
Oh, Aikman's another good one. It's just whoever's played in a lot of them. Yeah. Steve
well, then why
Young.
Didn't you think of that before? You could have won. Then we could have heard yourself.
I don't know.
We heard Brendan's on. Good job, B. You're the... You're the inaugural winner of Who's Smarter Than
Max. Yeah, big choke. Peyton Manning. By the way, Peyton Manning was half alive in the last Super Bowl. He passed away and people forgot to tell him in the last Super Bowl. And that's only two. What was I thinking? By the way, Jim Kelly probably, right? Because he went to four and lost them. But I got to imagine in those four Super Bowls, he threw at least five touchdowns. No? No.
Too late, Max. Doesn't matter. You already lost.
Damn. I'll see you tomorrow. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. I hate you, Raj.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.